Why should the wonders he hath wrought be lost in silence and forgot? While our descent into the oceanic abyss is beautiful and fascinating, it is fraught with at least three great limiting factors. Number one, it's hard for us to go there. Maybe a bit more on that later. Number two, the further we descend, the less abundant life becomes. Or at least it seems that way to us. Maybe we have a lot to learn yet. And number three, what we know about that life is limited. And so we are constantly straining at the edge of our knowledge, which is an uncomfortable place for a teacher to be. But sometimes we need to be there. That's what makes us dig, right? We're at the edge of our knowledge, and so we keep grappling for more. Well, because of this, hypotheses abound. We don't know for sure about many things. Well, let's quickly divide the oceans into regions in relation to their depth. Are you ready? 0 to 200 meters is the sunlight zone. They're not that hard to remember because they fit with where we are. The sunlight zone from 200 meters to 1,000 meters is the twilight zone. From 1,000 to 4,000 meters is the midnight zone. How could it be darker than that? From 4,000 to 6,000 is the abyss. And from 6,000 to 11,000 meters is the trenches. Well, the sunlight zone is the part of the ocean with which we are most familiar. Photosynthetic organisms thrive here, those that use the sunlight to produce food. You've thought about it. You've told your students that the only thing we ever eat, except salt, comes from a plant. We're all, can't get the word I want right now. We don't eat meat. What's the word we use for that? Vegetarian. We're all vegetarians. Doesn't matter what you think or what you wish. We just eat. Some of us eat at different stages of processing, but we're all vegetarians. It follows then that an abundance of other life in the ever-widening food chain also live here. So life in that area of the ocean, we have many tiny bits of life that are thriving from the sunshine that comes through. And then we go up the food chain from there. Well, let's move a little deeper. In the twilight zone, the limited sunlight that does get through is faint and filtered, and no photosynthesis can occur at these depths. Temperature of the water here is about where what you'd like to keep your refrigerator set at. 90% of the world's fish, by weight, live in this zone. I found that interesting. In the twilight zone is where 90% of the world's fish live. That is by weight. Let's move on down. In the midnight zone, there is no light from the sun, moon, or stars. Darkness reigns, unless there's something else that makes light, and there is. But it's not very bright. Many creatures rely on what is known as marine snow for their food, which is simply byproducts of the life above them. A little like the beef farmer that fed his cattle dried chicken litter. And the cattle actually profited from that quite nicely. He fed them other things too. Decaying animals dropping down toward the bottom and other types of organic matter. Marine snow slowly filters down, and so the life there is using that for food. Anglerfish make their home in this zone. You've probably seen pictures of that fish. Maybe show you some pictures after a while with a little bait out in front of him. And so, just like you fish with a fishing rod and a lure, pardon me, he does the same thing. Some little creature comes after that bait and he catches him for his lunch. The lure that he hangs out in front of him is bioluminescent. Bioluminescence is quite common in this dark sea world. We said there are other things that make light, but don't picture it's light down there, but around these little creatures there's a little bit of light. This is chemically powered light, just like the fireflies in your backyard, the same type of light. Let's go on. The outstanding feature of the abyss, other than those we have already looked at, is simply the pressure. Now, the pressure increases incrementally as we descend into the ocean. But it's phenomenal pressure at some of these depths. Pressures that we cannot cope with. Up to 600 times what is experienced at sea level. Try to imagine pressures of 7,000 psi. 7,000 psi. So the tires on your car are at about 40 or 50 psi. But we have 7,000. Every square inch we're pushing in with 7,000 pounds. Every square inch. We said it was hard to get there. That's what we're talking about. That's the reason it's hard to get there, is because if we're going to get there, we're going to have to surround ourselves with something that's structurally very, very strong. Like Alvin. You know Alvin? That machine that they made that descends down to, went down to look for the Titanic. You've probably seen pictures of Alvin. Off the big ship, the mother ship, and down he goes. And then he can propel himself down there and has lights on, but the lights don't reach very far. And then there's even a little creature, a little machine that's housed in the side of Alvin that can come out on a little cord and go around down inside the Titanic and look all over. His name is Jason. But those machines have to be extremely strong. They had a machine not so long ago that imploded on them. But they should have known better. That machine wasn't made right for the depths in which it was operating. But we'll leave that. Well, even at these great depths, tripod fish, rat-tail fish, octopi, and sea cucumbers can be found. And we're moving a little bit deeper yet. When we descend into the trenches zone, we are encumbered by all of the difficulties that we have already met. We have darkness, we have cold, we have ever-increasing pressure, and we have rarity of life. At least we think so. And the extreme difficulty of reaching these depths. In 2018... scientists named a snailfish. It was found at 27,000 feet of depth. What kind of armor do you think it wore? Or did it somehow get the pressure equaled inside and out? Our bodies can change, can't they? That's why you kind of stretch around a little bit when you go take off in an airplane or whatever, or come up the top of a hill or down to the bottom. And your ears go pop, and we're just equalizing the pressure inside and out. Ever try that in water? A little different problem, wouldn't it? Well, God knows how this all works. It's the deepest living fish ever found. It lacks scales, has large teeth, does not bioluminesce, and it is the only named fish at such depth, although a second has been seen on video. But it's the only one that they actually named at that depth. Well, leaving the trenches behind now and talking a little bit more generally, one requirement for life is, if you remember from that study in school and what you teach, the taking in materials from its environment. In other words, a living thing must eat. Well, because of that fact, and because of the way the deep sea is, life in the deep sea will tend to be in pockets and or pulses. Pockets means a spot here and a spot over there, and pulses means now for a while and then none, and then over there for a while and then none. So deep sea life will often be in pulses or in pockets. Let's talk about that a bit more. Dead creatures and excretions from living creatures will slowly make their way to the ocean floor. We've talked about that. They're coming slowly down, the smaller pieces, marine snow. But only 5% will ever reach the floor of the ocean because of all the hungry jaws along the way. It'll be eaten before it ever gets there. But 5% gets there. And this brings us to the first of two. There are more than two. We'll look at two types of pockets and or pulses of life at these great depths. The first is called a whale fall, which is just what you would guess it to be, the final resting place of a dead whale. That's called a whale fall. And right then, there we have a pulse of life, we might say. Many flesh-eating creatures congregate upon the feast. I wondered as I studied, how do they know where it is or how do they find it? I'm not sure if I can answer all those questions, but they find it and they congregate there. We have sleeper sharks, we have rat-tailed fish, such things as snow crabs, brittle stars, squat lobsters. I'll show you a few pictures maybe in a bit. The feeding frenzy scatters food and nutrients around the site on the ocean floor. This, in turn, attracts more creatures such as anemones, sea stars, mollusks, and worms. When the flesh is gone, bone eaters arrive. Whale bone is about 60% fat by weight. Isn't that fascinating? And so we find certain worms and snails arriving on the scene. How do they arrive? The worms ride the ocean currents as larvae and then settle on the exposed bone. And then God gave them acid to help them bore into the bone. And they can absorb the fats with the help of bacteria. Beautiful symbiosis, we call it. Two creatures or more working together in harmony to help each other survive. And so in the months and years after a whale fall, the site will become the home of millions of creatures. Of course, many of them very tiny. So a whale fall could be a pulse of life. It exists only for a time. And then there's no life there anymore at that place. Let's look now at a pocket of life around a hydrothermal vent. Now, this is what we'd call a pocket of life, right? At this spot in the ocean floor, there's life abounding. Well, this is also what its name suggests. It's a warm water vent way down there. The warm water is pushing up into the ocean, hot water, actually. The water seeps down, way down. It gets heated down there and gets forced back up, extremely hot, into the ocean, a hydrothermal vent. On the way down and back up, it picks up minerals. So now we have water that's very heavy with minerals. It also has absorbed tremendous heat. It meets the cold water coming out of that vent, and that creates chemical reactions. Part of what happens is we have pillars that get built at these hydrothermal vents, pillars of minerals. Well, one of the fascinations of this environment is the heat source. This water can be spewing out at temperatures up to 400 degrees Celsius, hot enough to melt lead. Why isn't it just boiling down there? Tremendous pressure. At some of those depths, water doesn't boil to around the same temperature. Can you imagine water not boiling at 400 Celsius? I can't imagine that. How long would it take to cook potatoes at that? Imagine a pressure cooker that the needle would go up to. How high would it go? See? You'd be done before you started. And one of these machines down there was extending a thermometer into to see what temperature this water was, and the thing started melting. They had to retrieve it again. It's extremely hot, but it, of course, soon cools. But let's say that somewhere about 100 miles from here, there was extreme heat being produced. Ah, it would have to be extreme for us to think about that. But depending on what you liked, you would build your house at the right distance from that heat source to keep you just the temperature you liked. That's what's happening down there. These different creatures live at different distances away from that heat source, and it keeps them happy. Because the heat source is constant, as long as it is constant. that they don't always stay that way. Well, how do these creatures survive? We have clams, mussels, shrimp, gigantic worms that cheerfully exist in this seemingly hostile environment. Well, God provided for them too. And again, we see symbiosis at work. There are either bacteria that live inside or on the surface of their hosts. Listen carefully. These bacteria produce energy through a chemical reaction. Fascinating. There's no sunlight involved. It's all chemical. And the chemicals come from the minerals that are exiting from the vents. So I guess if you'd eat one of them, then you wouldn't be vegetarian. What do you call that? Chemicalarian or something like that. Why should the wonders he hath wrought be lost in silence and forgot? One little creature out there in the ocean eats a sea anemone, but it somehow avoids digesting or discharging the little stinging cells that were once the anemone's self-defense. Through special canals, these little stinging cells travel from the sea slug's digestive tract to the surface of its skin. There these stolen weapons wait, ready to discharge a painful attention getter at the next fish that happens by. Isn't that a wonder? That's symbiosis again. Stolen weapons. Many sea slugs, now these aren't in at great depths, these are up in the where the sunlight can hit them, eat algae and transport their functional chloroplasts to the slug's back where they can continue to produce food. I think that's a wonder. God didn't make us with a glass top, did he? If he did, we could grow some little plants up there and it would give us energy. That's what these little creatures do. When these little chloroplasts have spent their energy, the little slug just goes from their meal of algae. Coexistence, symbiosis. Well, there's another little creature here, a sea slug. He starts with a good, healthy meal of algae. Again, these little chloroplasts are carefully transported to just underneath the transparent skin of his back. But to this little creature, the Creator gave the ability to manufacture the much-needed chlorophyll to keep these little chloroplasts working for the rest of his life. All he needs to do is sunbathe. Actually, he must produce more than chlorophyll. There are other chemicals that must be made in exact proportions to work along with the chlorophyll. What a wonder. Chlorophyll itself is a wonder. You find a scientist that can perfectly explain chlorophyll. I'd like to meet him. We don't know. Without it, we'd all die. We'd have died long ago. God's secret. He forgot. God is, that is. Forgot to tell that little slug. Did he forget? The tremendous complexity involved in the manufacturing of chlorophyll. He forgot to tell him that the transporting of chloroplasts or stinging cells through those delicate channels is nigh impossible. Just like he forgot to tell the fir tree that neither osmosis nor capillary action sufficiently explains how the water can climb those 300 feet to the tips of its topmost branches. And just like he forgot to tell the bumblebee that it scientifically cannot fly, so it just flies anyway. Our Creator doesn't forget. But he does make wonders. Just a few pictures. And I know these are kind of far away from you. Worms. Worms anywhere from, well, up to 5 feet long. What an enticing study. Well, I guess. There's a man peeking out a porthole in one of those deep sea dives. Even that glass has to be made. Well, I don't know how they make it. Strong. Now, I was talking about, well, here's the destruction of one of those hydrothermal vents. Then over here is one thriving again. And they took those pictures at different times to show the chronology. Slowly but surely, life again began to come. There's sometimes volcanic action down there, you see. It destroyed one of those places, and then later it came back again. Pictures of one of those hydrothermal vents again. Too far away, but hopefully you can see a little bit. By accident, Alvin knocked over a 33-foot chimney. When we returned 3 months later, it had grown back 20 feet. That's fast. Some more creatures of the depths. Well, that was a picture of Alvin right at the end there. There he comes up out of the water onto the mothership again, and then they go over all their findings and talk about what they learned down there in that depth. And here, just creatures, deep sea life, all kinds. One wonders what all is there that we haven't found yet. Probably a lot. If there's any frontier, it's probably there, don't you think? Mankind's frontier? I guess it could be out in space too, but it has to be in the ocean. Oh, we don't have time to look at them all. Such little wonders. And for each one of them, God provided everything that they need to survive, happily survive. They don't have a headache every day because of the pressure. Here's a good picture of a hydrothermal vent. Has some color on it. These chimneys of rock that form. Some are black, some are white. Sometimes they're called white smokers, black smokers, because of that. Creatures again, life. Tiny creatures. You ever stop to wonder why God made all those? Do they help us? They haven't yet. Or maybe they do. I don't know. All the creatures in the forest, all the creatures. Why did he? I wonder if maybe it's the same reason as he made the platypus. Just to make man ask a lot of questions that we can't answer. And just to wonder at what he's done. I love science because it always makes me wonder at God and what he's done. What was the first thing I said when I came up here? Thank you. Why should the wonders he hath wrought be lost in silence and forgot? Lord bless you.